Hey, what's happening, everybody? This is Dennis Terrell of Terrell Knife Works, and you and I are listening to the Work For It podcast, where the emphasis is on business in the workshop. You can support these guys for as little as $1 a month or $12 a year, and show your support by going to patreon.com/workforit to find out more. $12 a year, that won't even buy 2 gallons of gasoline here in California. You might as well support these guys like I do, so they can help us all work for it.
You're listening to the Work For It podcast. My name is Brian House. I'm in the studio with Nick Tobin Pickle Cutters. And we have a special guest today joining us, Sharky. You may not know his real name. Neither did we until a few minutes ago. Sharky Custom Knives is in the studio. We're going to be talking about business in the workshop. That's right. Every single week, we have to remind you, you people, that you have to get out there and you have to make the stuff. Then you got to sell it. Sales and marketing, the 50-50 rule. Deploy this thing, and you too can change your life. You want to create a side hustle. You want to make a little more money. You want to free up your day just a little bit and say, you know what? I'm tired of working for the man. I'm tired of it. He's got his thumb down on my forehead. He's pushing my face into the mud, telling me what to do every single day. I'm sick of it. I want to change my life. The only way you can do that is through collaboration with other people who have done it themselves. And that's what this podcast is all about. Finding a pathway to making a little bit more money and possibly eventually changing your life. You can do it because I did it. Nick did it. Brian Cohn, who's not with us today, did it. And Sharky is on his way. I believe he's on his way. I know he's active military. We got lots to talk about that too, because I'm super interested in that. But anyway, I wanted to tell you guys a little bit about what I have been thinking about in the last couple of weeks. Ever since I got the stomach flu, I've had this nostalgia burning inside of me, talking about going back to our roots, getting deep down, digging for the gold that is our professional life, right? I have tried to find the inspiration in my daily work, and sometimes I'm just on the go. I just got too much going on, very task-oriented. I'm trying to just nail down every single order, get them done, get them out the door, find new products to create, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I realized I'm on the treadmill again. I have created my own rat cage and I'm living inside of it. So it was time to spin around and look around and go, I got to break free of my own devices. I've got to get back to the basics, dig it up, find that gold, find that inspiration. Because when I get inspired, that means you get inspired. And we all rise up together. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about what inspires us as makers and what we can do to keep that fire burning. So gentlemen, real quick, before I do anything else, before I continue on with this podcast, I want to very quickly just have Sharky introduce himself, give us the elevator pitch on who you are and what you do. Don't mess it up, Sharky. Go ahead. No pressure.
Sounds great, man.
No pressure.
So for my day job, I am a helicopter pilot in the United States Air Force. I fly the UH-1N, the Huey. It's the classic Vietnam-style helicopter that everyone's so familiar with. And it is pretty much exactly the same as it was in Vietnam. Beautiful old helicopter. And then in the evenings is when I delve into the custom knife world. So I primarily came into the industry making what we would call combo or segmented scales, multi-piece handles that are prefabbed and ready to be put on a knife. That's kind of how I got my foot in the door. And since then, I've been expanding out into other knife supplies. I do a lot of wood handle scales, source a lot of vintage micarta and that kind of stuff, and have been continually expanding my product line through other knife care oils and waxes and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So all in all, in my nighttime life, I am a knife handle supplier for the custom knife industry. So
I have to tell you, the first time I met you, you were wearing a very bright colored jacket over your over a t-shirt. This is your classic the Sharky uniform when you're selling your wares, and somehow you managed to get like the best table at Blade Show. I don't know how you did this, But like, as soon as you walk into the big room, into the big doors, there's Sharky in this like bright purple and green or blue. Usually it just depends on what he's wearing that day. And you just, your presentation is fantastic. And we try to talk about this in on the podcast a lot and with other people that we do business mentoring with. It's like, you got to set yourself apart. You know, marketing is not that difficult, but it does take risk, right? You have to like say, I want to do something a little different to set myself apart. How did you come up with the concept that you're going to wear these, like, it's like, I don't even know. It's like a tuxedo jacket. Like, where do you find these? Like in a Halloween store somewhere?
I love that you brought this up because this is one of my favorite things to talk about my business. The marketing side is just so fascinating to me. I think there's so many people out there who know how to hustle and work. But marketing just takes, you're right. It takes a lot of courage and it takes, you know, a whole different kind of work. So I love talking about this stuff. So one of the big things that I always tell people when it has come to marketing is that marketing isn't always something that you have to necessarily like invent for yourself, right? Sometimes these things just kind of present themselves. The story behind the jacket, it started out as an Instagram joke. I was doing a live video working on selling some products and someone threw a comment down on the video that said, these handles you're selling are so fancy, you should be wearing a tuxedo while you sell them. And one of my buddies commented and was like, nah, Sharky is definitely not the kind of person who should be wearing a tuxedo. What he should be wearing is a purple sequined jacket. So I found one online. Actually, I think my buddy sent me one online, but regardless, found a picture of this jacket online and posted it to my story and was like, hey, if someone buys me this jacket, I'll wear it in the rest of my videos from now on. Ha ha ha. You know, thinking this was just going to be some kind of joke that would blow over. A few days later, the jacket shows up at my house.
Oh my gosh. Like,
someone actually bought this jacket for me and sent it to me. So I said I would wear it in some videos. So I threw it on in the videos. It was a hit. Everyone had a good time. I wore it for like two or three videos. And then I did a video without the jacket on. And immediately the comments just started flooding in, like people, hey, where's the jacket, man? What happened to the jacket? You said you were going to wear the jacket. And I realized pretty quickly that, like, number one, this joke wasn't dead yet. And number two, like, this was a thing that people were kind of into. And you're right. Like this, you have to have something that sets you apart. And this had just kind of presented itself to me. So I started wearing it on my videos. When I did my first Blade show as an actual, you know, working a table, I was like, well, I mean, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyways, do you guys think I should wear the jacket? And just a resounding yes from the audience. So I have worn it to every Blade show that I've been to, whether I'm working or just wandering, I wear the jacket. And it has become a rather iconic part of my marketing scheme that I have very much leaned into. And the purple theme, if you ever see me at the show, I always have purple shoes on of some sort, whether they're skate shoes that are painted purple or even my Brunt work boots that I wear, I have purple laces in them now. And it's just become a thing. And people will walk up to me at the shows and be like, man, do you know how easy it is to find you in that thing? And
I'm like, I was just going to say,
it's brilliant.
I never would have thought about that. No way. Yep. You've taught me something today.
Yep. It's brilliant. That was the reason.
Pickle does the same thing, by the way. This is the genius behind what Pickle has done with his whole green theme. He loves to smoke weed, so he's always high, and he's got like a green shirt on usually. Like, even Maritime Knife Supply, one of the sponsors of the show, made him special a green T-shirt because that's who he is.
St. Paddy's Day, he sent me that green one that I had on. And for Blade Show, he has a black one with the green Maritime Supply Knife Supply logo on it.
Yeah, so, yeah, it cool. Really doesn't take much to set yourself apart. And once you do this, you know, Brent and I talk a lot about this. Like, when you go to Blade Show, you're usually amongst a lot of people who look very similar and make a lot of a very similar style knife. And, you know, you have to kind of branch out and do different things to try to get the attention of, say, even a small minority of people who are there that are interested in your work. That's all it takes is to sell out your table. You know, it's just a few people. So, you know, the marketing component of what you're doing, it started out as a joke and it's kind of silly, but it's become your calling card. I mean, it's just, you stand out in my mind amongst all the other people who do similar work to what you do. And when I think of scales or knife scales or custom segmented scales, I think of you. And it's just, and by the way, the jacket is kind of a personification of the work that you do too. You know, it's very colorful and bright and segmented. So it makes sense.
Yeah, it's, and you know, like I kind of hinted at the beginning of this segment, you know, a lot of marketing has to be really intentional, right? There are certainly parts of marketing that have to be intentional and you have to put time and energy into. But one of the things I think people overlook a lot of the time is just kind of watching what your customers give you feedback on, because a lot of times they'll give you feedback on something that works great. And you can take that and run with it. And that can be part of your business's image, right? And it's sometimes you don't have to, you know, dig so hard for stuff. If the customers are responding to a certain topic, look into that and be like, hey, how can I expand this? And how can I make this part of what I'm doing? Because clearly people are kind of into this.
Yeah, we talk a lot about how the market kind of decides certain things. Pickle had created a knife profile that he liked. It was just something that was kind of in his style, but he sold more of those than anything else. And people have been coming to him going, I want that. I want that. I want that. And it's kind of like our projects that we do with Housemaid when we started the Revolution project, and even something as simple as like the coffee scoop project that we do now. And it's like, you know, 3 million people watch me make that stupid thing, you know, on Instagram. And that's like, okay, well, then obviously we need to make these. You know, we need, if 3 million people watch me do it, and all I have to do is get 1% of 1% of people to buy it. And that's it. And then, and it's a game over situation. I love it, man. And I love what you're doing. And I'm so glad that you reached out and said you wanted to become a part of the podcast, or at least come on the podcast, because some people do reach out to us and ask for that. We're usually just three guys talking on here, and we don't usually have guests, but Brian, unfortunately, is not feeling well. So when somebody bows out and you just happen to be around, I was like, hey, Sharky, can you come on, man? Thanks so much. And you were like, yeah, you can do it. And real quick, before we switch over to what Nick has been up to in the workshop, I've got a couple questions about the professional work that you do outside of making. So I know you're active military in the Air Force, and you're an older guy, right? So you've been in, like, I'm guessing you're in your 30s, maybe 40s. You've been in the military for a while. Are you a lifer, or what's your career path look like outside of making?
I have been in the military, depending on how you count the time, for 12 or 16 years. I did. I went to the Air Force Academy for college, which is military training and college combined into one. Some people count that, some people don't. But regardless, been in for a while. But yes, I am a lifer. So I have a little over 7 years left in the military. They offered me a contract extension about a year ago, and so weighed the pros and cons of it and decided that I'd like to keep flying for those next 7 years, because it means when I'm done with my military commitment in the 7 years, I should be able to dive straight into working for myself and living for myself. And that was kind of the deciding factor for me. If I had to go get another job after the military, then I wasn't so much interested in signing another 8-year contract. But if I could focus my energies while I was still in the military on these, side hustles, as culture would call it, which I don't think is particularly accurate based on the amount of time that I put into it. But if I could focus on some energy into that while I was in the service and finish out my time and be able to dive headfirst into that, then it was absolutely worth the next 8-year contract. So that's what I did. So I'll be out in 2031. But at that time, I'll be able to take Flying Shark knives, Flying Shark supplies, all the little branches of my business, and kind of make that my full-time gig, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're having these conversations now in my house because I have my oldest son who is about ready to enlist in the Air Force. He's been kind of wavering back and forth. Like, he thought Army for a while, and then, you know, my father-in-law was Air Force. And so, you know, we kind of went back and forth. Plus, a lot of our listeners are Air Force. We've got a large military following, guys that have done their either 4 years or whatever, or lifers. And so we have a lot of guidance in that world. And, you know, us housewarts, we are tactile humans. You know, I went to college. I have a bachelor's of science degree. I had no business being there. Like, I should not have gone to university. I did it because my parents wanted me to, and I was too big of a pussy to join the military back then. And I kind of regret that. I really wish I would have. We were in the second Iraq conflict during that time, and I had a bunch of buddies going over to Afghanistan. It was really hard. Some of them didn't come back. So I just really had to think a lot about that. So I chose the college route. And I wish I'd gone to the military. So when my son said he wanted to do it, Air Force seemed like the right fit for him because he's very tactile. You know, he can get a lot of jobs in that world. And one of the things we talked about was preparing yourself for like the real world. Like, once you get out of high school and you're done with that being kind of locked down and having to be on a schedule and everything, it's really difficult to transition into like modern world. And I think we forget about this, like moving from high school to college or your, whatever your further education is, or military, or just say going into a job. It's like really scary for these kids now, you know, they're just really having a hard time. And I was the same way. I didn't know what to do either. I just kind of like followed wherever the wind blew me, you know. But now I really have this firm belief that, you know, certain kids should do a stint in the military or learn some sort of regimented discipline and learn a skill. And also, I fully believe there's no point in taking a $200,000+ school loan, student loan, and digging yourself into debt only to come out and make $15 an hour, you know. We've sold a lie to these, you know, even my generation. You know, when I went to school, I think it cost me about $50,000, you know, to go through university. And I was blessed because I gotten in a car accident. Someone had smashed me bad. And this person did not have a driver's license, but they were married to a neurosurgeon. So my insurance company sued them and put some money aside for me. And my dad said, you know, this will be your school money, so you can use this money to go to school. And it wasn't much. It was like $40,000. But back then, that's a lot of money. That paid for me to go to university. You know, that's what got me my degree. And so, you know, now these kids are stuck with this idea that they've got to go and, you know, go to dig themselves into major debt and then try to get a job on the way out. I'm curious, because you've been in for so long, do you have an opinion on that? Like, are you in that same sort of category of people when you were making the decision, you know, you're getting out of high school or whatever, and you went off to Air Force College? Was that your mindset when you did that? Or, you know, what was the driving force there?
You know, there were a lot of things that pushed me towards the Air Force Academy and joining the military just in general. Financials being a part of them for sure. I did not grow up in a household where college money was, you know, playing around for me. So finding a way to get to college was going to take some, you know, some sort of creative route, right? And I was kind of, I think, pretty close to where you were at, you know, kind of blown in the wind, like, hey, people say I got to go to college, so I guess I'm going to go to college and let's figure out how to do that. So I don't know that there was like a really in-depth amount of thought that went into my choices. But what I have, what I do encourage people a lot, I do a lot of career days and that kind of stuff for the military. What I do very much agree with you on, the military is a really great way to open your eyes to the real world. Because you're right, there is a huge gap in between high school and being an adult. I don't think, and I, you know, I can't speak for our friends in the Great White North up there, but I don't think that schools in the United States prepare you for real life. High school's not made for preparing you for real life. You don't learn how to do taxes. You don't learn how to, you know, negotiate a job offer. You don't really learn how to do any of those real tangible, real life things that you need to get paid and pay your bills. I think the military is a great stepping stone for that. Whether you do the 4 years or the whole career, you know, like any job, there's pros and cons to the military. There's things that I love about it. There's things that I absolutely hate about it, you know, and that comes in waves depending on who my boss is on any given day or what, you know, what base I'm at and that kind of stuff. So it has its pros and cons, and I will never be the guy who says like, oh, every single part of being in the Air Force is amazing, because that's not accurate. But what it is really good at is bridging that gap between high school that has prepared you for nothing and this big, scary adult world. Because you go through boot camp and you join the military, and like high school, there's still someone guiding you, right? There's, you have a whole structure of people above you that are helping you, you know, figure out where you're supposed to be. And it's kind of slowly feeds you that responsibility, right? When you first get in, you're not really expected to do anything other than show up to work, and everyone expects that you're an idiot and have no idea what's going on. And then they slowly build you up into being an adult and knowing what's going on. So whether you're a, you know, a one-term person or a life person, I think it's a great stepping stone into the big scary adult world, and figuring out like what real life is all about, as opposed to, you know, what high school told you that civics was, because that was not particularly a useful class.
I fully believe too that we do not prepare our children for the real world in all of those regards. And some of that is intentional, by the way. I think there's more to this. I mean, obviously this is not what the theme of the podcast is, but you know, the public school system was designed by Rockefeller to just pump out factory workers. And we're still doing the same, kind of following the same concepts. And so I think now that's all going to change. I'll make a prediction. In like 5 years or even 10 years, we are going to have to massively shift how we educate our children in the public school space and prepare them for the changes that the world, you know, the internet has brought, literally like all these opportunities for us to make money online. And we're still teaching our kids to sit in a line and follow this rule, do that and do that. So it's going to be an interesting 10 years to watch the transformation of our society, and hopefully we can get a wrangle on it before things get too out of control. So I'm really eager to learn more about you, Sharky, because like I just you're an interesting guy, and I appreciate you coming on here and telling us a little bit about yourself. But real quick, I want to switch gears and talk to Pickle real fast, because I feel like we've neglected you, Nick. We're just sitting here. You're just sitting there listening. But Nick, what have you gotten going on this week in your workshop, and what's the news?
All kinds of jazz going on. Making steel, making knives, the typical weekly thing. I yesterday ground a knife that I thought would have came out without any issues, hoping that copper leak wouldn't have affected that end of the billet, but it did. And I ruined what would have been pretty much probably the nicest knife I've ever made by the time it would have been done, what I had in mind for it. So that was kind of kick to the balls yesterday. That took me down for a bit, and then I brought it to the table, and I was like, snap test, this test, torture test, see what's going on, see how copper reacts under pressure, you know, because I get the question a lot, like, all this copper in the blade, how does the blade hold up, you know, will the blade bend and blah, 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 and like, a lot of people think because there's copper in these blades that they're going to be a weaker blade. I can tell you that that is false, because that blade was a fucking bitch to break. And the grain was great, and what happened to the copper was not what I expected. That copper sheared apart. It literally sheared. You could tell, like, when you take the two pieces and you look at them, the copper didn't just, like, you know, like, fold with the break of the blade. No, it ripped apart with the break of the blade. So it's pretty wild.
Do you think that happened because it got too hot and it slightly changed the alloy. You know, the way copper works is if you want to anneal it, you have to cool it slowly. So I'm curious, because I'm ignorant. I don't know anything about this, but when a piece of copper is by itself and I quench it, it softens.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and so when you heat treated that blade, right? It was hard.
Copper will not be affected by a heat treat, and there should be no carbon migration going to that copper either. Like, I had the conversation, like what you just said came out of Dennis's mouth yesterday, and Dennis Tyrell, by the way. And it's definitely a weird situation. Like, cause I'd never seen anybody or heard of anybody taking copper my or whatever, you know, like bend test, snap test. I've never seen the inside of a billet or a knife that had been heat treated and snapped with anything copper in it, right? So
yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah,
it was super interesting to watch you bend that, because you really had to put some force on that thing.
Oh yeah, and I got, you know, I got it to bend pretty good. Like somebody mentioned in the comments, if I would have done it the proper way, you know, like with a longer bar to get that leverage going and do it smoothly, not jerk it around and like jumping on it almost, you know, trying to get it to break. But my intentions were to get it to break. Like, I didn't want to see if I could bend it and have it come back, or the blade was 3/16 thick, right? But it did catch a bend. Like, it bent before it cracked. So it was definitely interesting. And with everything going on Instagram, with that whole, you know, not being seen to non-followers, like, I see a lot of people, like, I'm just going to bring this up. It's not necessarily a sidetrack, but what I did yesterday, that whole process of doing this blade, I started off with 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 reels, okay? And we're not being shown to non-followers, no. But if you put interesting content out there, you're still going to get views and you're still going to get numbers, right? So I put this whole process out there, and they're all good views. Like, I got 2,000-something views on one, almost 2,000 on the other, 1,500 on the other. One of them's a little bit lower, but it's still got things going anyways on Instagram. So, like, my point here bringing this up was to tell people to stop bitching and crying about it and just keep on posting. Because even though if you cry, it's not going to change anything. It's just annoying more than anything else. Like, I find it funny. I've made a few posts, but nothing to say, you know, like, I'm really bummed with this, because like I mentioned in one post, my sales don't come from Instagram.
Yeah.
So on top of dealing with all that crap this week, Instagram being a douche, and then this failed billet, like, what happened is when I was forge welding it, well, brazing it technically, I had just finished a billet. Okay. And it was a copper my billet. My forge was set just fine for it. You know, everything was working out great. So I threw a fresh billet in there and I cranked up the fuel a bit. So I was like, get it, you go get the billet harder, quicker, but keep an eye on it, right? So I throw the billet in there and I was like, oh, I got time to roll one up. So I roll one up real quick, which takes about 45 seconds to a minute, right? Turn around, open the forge door. I got copper leaking out of one end of that billet. Yeah, and it was leaking out of my cladding, because my cladding had copper in it. And it wasn't sealed, if you want to say, from the welding of the billet when I weld the contour of the billet. So that was another learning curve right there, is that next time I do use the copper in a cladding material, once I weld that billet sealed, I'm going to go from edge to edge on that edge. So you get what I'm saying?
You, like, mean
I'm
just fully gonna encase it, essentially.
Fully encase it with weld bead, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that copper that was on the top end of that billet when it leaked, when it was in the forge, it leaked that one end, like I said, but I thought I would have been safe if I would have put that end for the tang and then the other end for the blade, and it wouldn't have affected my pattern. But I was proven wrong, and it ruined the blade, like, aesthetically wise. The blade was sound, but aesthetically wise, it was garbage. A lot of people wanted it, and I was like, nope, nobody's getting this. It's not leaving the shop. I'm not even putting a handle on it. It's going through hell, and that's it.
Yeah, because when I looked at you holding it before you bent it and broke it, it looked pretty good to me. You know, I was looking at it. I couldn't find any.
Oh, the other side was visual. Horrible.
Yeah. Oh, the other side.
Yeah, there's one side of that blade. The left-hand side of the blade was mint. But if you turn it around and look at the right-hand side and you pause that video and you look that top, the top two lines of copper, there's missing a bunch of copper there.
Ah, I see. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that's no bueno. That's like aesthetically not sound for me. Like I would not, I've seen some guys put out worse shit than that and like let it leave the shop. I'm not that guy. I will not do that.
You're definitely more of a perfectionist and you won't let stuff out of your shop.
I take way too much pride in my work. You know, and it doesn't happen often that I don't let something leave my shop and start over. This is maybe the second or third time that I need to start something over since I started this.
And there's a significant time investment in what you're doing. I mean, it's
absolutely, because this billet was definitely, definitely one hell of a build. Because there's like, I used offcuts from one billet, well, from two billets that I made for a customer, technically. And I had like 5-inch offcuts off those billets because a customer ordered 12 inches. So twice. So I sent him his 12 inches. I wasn't going to give him 5 free inches, right? So I took those two pieces.
There's a joke in there somewhere. Gutter.
Yeah, I know there is a joke. Yeah, get that joke out of your ass. But I got these two offcuts that are like copper my stuff. It's like Damascus copper shim, 1084 shim, copper shim, 1084 core. So I take two of these pieces and then I put more copper in there and then I put Damascus for the core. You know, so now I got to recreate my first original billets to get down to this billet and recreate a Damascus billet to get this billet done. So I got to make like in total 3 billets to get this billet done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's definitely, you know, I had done the billet on lost time. Well, not lost time. I had the forge going and everything and I had these offcuts there and I had a vision and I went for it. It wasn't an order at that point. And then I drew out knives and one knife, that knife that I drew out, somebody's like, what are you making that knife with? And I was like, this is the steel I intend on using. And they're like, hell yeah. And they paid me for it, right? So now it's no longer existent. It's paid for and I got to remake it.
Oh, geez.
But that's okay with me. Like, I'm fine with that. And the customer's fine with it too. Like, he's a good customer of mine. He's already got knives on in the books already as we speak, you know? And he's got another one coming too. That Quaken that I posted yesterday is his as well too, so. He nabbed that as well.
We briefly spoke about this online together, but it's about failing forward, right? Like, you know, yep. when you make a mistake, which we all do, and it sucks, right? It's like, but you learn, you walk away with all that knowledge that no one can take away from you at that point. So it's a learning experience. And as much as it sounds like an inspirational poster, it's the truth. I mean, you do things that are risky and you're taking those risks hoping to achieve something. And even if you only made it 75% of the way there, you know, you walked away with some very valuable knowledge. The next time you decide you're going to do it, you know better. You and I talked briefly about adding a PID controller, a thermocouple to your forge so that this won't happen again.
Happen again. Exactly. Like, yeah. Yeah. It has to be taken care of because it is, you know, it's my bread. Like my copper mys are one of my big sellers. And like, I've come like 3 times close to saying, fuck copper. I'm never doing copper again. Like there's never going to be copper in any of my blades. I'm just going to stick to nickel, save myself all these hard times. Right. Because it's not only the melting factor in the forge and all that. It's also the etching process. Sure. We have gator piss now. But if you want to, you know, there's just everything has limits, right? And gator piss is definitely a good product, but I use it to finish off my etches. And I have these guys, I was watching actually Grayson Gray Blades is live with Koi the other day. And that made me rethink my process, though, to be honest with you. And like I said, definitely a good product. And I didn't think that I could get blades that black with just gator piss, but Grayson did. And
yeah, you so definitely like can. It's yes. But you got to follow that recipe. Yes,
exactly. Yep. You know, and that's one thing with me. I like it when things are efficient and smooth sailing and quickly done. You know what I'm saying? Fast, now, simple, and efficient.
I'm just throwing this out there. Let's just say you don't want to mess around with this and you want to, say, get make a blade that looks like that, but you don't have all the tools or energy and equipment to make the steel. Where would you buy it?
You would buy it from Baker Forge and Tool.
You just go right to Koi and the boys.
Yeah, right
the
to
wizards
Koi,
in the
Koi
workshop.
And the boys.
Those guys, yeah. They know what they're doing, and make sure you go check out BakerForge.com. Use WFI10 as your promo code to get 10% off. And
they just
make
put out
sure
some
you check out
my, I think, too. Like, they just did a
they
drop.
Did.
That yep, shit looks fucking drop a, beautiful.
First drop of bronze mine in a little while. That stuff is just phenomenal. Yep.
And it's in stock.
Dude,
I'm looking at it right now.
Too, like, yep. I got it in my face.
That was
in stock.
That was one of their biggest mind-boggling. The Baker Forge has just constantly mind-boggling achievements in the knife steel world.
Oh, dude.
But coming up with a way to expand. I mean, copper mine was so big when it first started coming out. We could put copper into blades, right? And that was so cool because Damascus is neat. Now you add another color to it, right? And it was just this awesome thing. And then Koi was like, well, we're not done yet. We're going to add a second color to this. And being able to have that brass and that copper either together or separately in billets, just the yep. not actual
it's amazing.
Brass copper of brass color of bronze mine. Oh, just so cool.
Yeah, they've really taken it to another level.
And then he's got the stainless cores. I had seen he did the Nitro V, but I guess he's doing AEBL as well too. AEBL core on copper Mai.
Yes, he has a copper Mai stainless core now. Yeah. Let's see if I'm on his website, bakerforge.com.
There was the Nitro V one, and I didn't know there was AEBL, but that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, he's got both. Yeah, I see it there.
Yeah, the copper Mai with the crushed W cores, too, is fucking sick.
Yeah, ridiculous.
You get that pattern. Like, you got the copper Mai cladding running one way, and then you got the core running the other way, and it just looks so fucking wild.
Also, what's important to understand is that Koi he is an interesting individual because, you know, for the longest time he ran a painting contracting business, and one day he decided to get into this, making different types of steels and all of that, and has grown his business exponentially. And every time I talk with him, he's doing something new, right? The guy's like breaking into some different avenue. I have a lot of love and respect for what those guys are doing over there. And of course they support our work by using our forges and, you know, all of that. So they're just fantastic folks to work with. I think it's important to understand too, is like, you know, in any industry, in any community, it's easy to find the guys who really, really love the work. And Koi is one of those guys. You can just tell that he loves what he does. The stuff that's coming out of his workshop, you know, he has a team of people helping him do this, but, you know, he is the driving force behind Baker Forge. It's an awesome experience for me as an entrepreneur to watch somebody like Koi succeed. And I just appreciate that we are in business together. I think it's fantastic. So anyway, go check out BakerForge.com. And then when you're ready to finish that knife, you need anything from abrasives to machines to handle material to pins, make sure you go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. I've got a very cool project coming up with Maritime. I have purchased a bunch of the 1080 hex steel that we are that we're going to smash down in the press. And then I went ahead and spent a bunch of money with Coal Iron and bought their last remaining 120 ton press. So now that's coming to my workshop. So that thing is going to be deployed, and we're going to be banging out all kinds of weird stuff in the workshop. So be on the lookout for that. But when I do this, so this is my, suffering and joy project that I'm working on. The hex, steel will be cut down like 1.5 inches to 2 inches in length, and then smashed vertically. So you still have this, you know, the octagonal shape around the outside, but it's smushed. And then I use a 2-inch ball bearing to cup out the innards of it. So it's kind of like a little dish. And some of them will be stamped with "this is my joy," and some of them will be stamped with "this is my suffering." And so if you've ever heard me say that, you know, that's my mental health, the things that I talk about from time to time on here, where certain parts of me go into the work that I do. And sometimes it's my joy and sometimes it's my suffering. In any case, whichever one you get a little piece of me. So you can buy, you know, these little hex dishes and have it on your desk, and it'll be suffering or it'll be joy. It doesn't really matter. They're both the same. In my opinion, this is part of the human experience. And it's a way for me to put a little bit of myself and some of my struggles into a piece of steel and then distribute it out to the community. So be on the lookout for that. Maritime Knife Supply is supplying me with all the hex stock for that. And he has that on sale on his website, maritimeknifesupply.com. And then it will be finished when I get done with it. I'm going to just slather that stuff in pelican paste. Of course, pelican paste. Travis Haynes, Bird Forge. He's got that wax in a tin. It's not like all the other ones. It's a little different. And if you haven't seen, he's coming out with pelican oil too, which is also a very cool product. Another guy stepping up in the community to do something with his, he's finding his little niches and the little pathways to generate revenue for his business. And I just truly appreciate Pelican Paste and Travis Haynes. PelicanPaste.com. Use WFI10 to get 10% off. Make sure you say, you tell Travis that the boys over at Workfort sent you. And so be on the lookout for that project for the hex stock. And we're doing that, you know, you never know. Maybe I'll get some Baker Forge stuff and we'll press out some Baker Forge suffering and joy dishes too. And we'll see where that whole process goes. But anyways, now that I'm
done with
that
rant. Do you
know
when you'll be getting that press?
I don't. The guys are working on it. I'm getting they have to build it. So they have a frame already. So they had three of them, and then they had one left. I talked with Nate and Shiloh about it, and then I messaged him on a Sunday and said, like, I see on your website you say you have one left. Is that true? And Shiloh's like, yeah, we got one left. So I pulled the trigger and bought it. I don't exactly know where I'm going to put it. It's massive. It's like 80 inches tall, this thing.
Nice.
It's 120 tons, so we'll do something with it, but
that would probably fall through my shop floor.
Yeah, Nate was trying to warn me about it. He's like, I don't know if you want this thing. It's so big, and like, you know, I'm like, I don't know, man. I just really want it. I don't know what else to say about it. I just need it. So, and we're doing all these like heavy press projects where we're pressing out massive pieces of stainless steel and stuff, and the 25 ton that we use to do that. It just can't do it. It can do it, but it has to be done in a bunch of heats. And so, you know, I'm investing in the tooling. Plus, I have a project that I need to do some press break stuff with, and this is perfect for that. So I'm going to build a jig for that and just press break out a bunch of parts on it. So it's not just going to be for creative endeavors. It's going to make parts as well. So it's going to be more to it than that. But, where are we at? We're at 42 minutes into the show. Real quick, I want to shift back over to Sharky because I got a couple of questions about social media. I know we have all these problems right now with censorship in the social world. Sharky, have you been hit with the that whole thing where you can't be recommended?
I sure have. Two different iterations of it now. I just got my second one about 2 weeks ago, that I'm currently fighting through. I think there is a very likely chance that if I just posted my own products, I would be able to avoid the censorships. However, one of the big tenets of my business model is, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Yeah. So I spend a lot of time shouting out my customers. I feel very strongly about that, showing off the finished products that they use. Cause I mean, that's good for both of us, right? It gets to show people what my work looks like finished up. And, you know, I hopefully get to introduce them to some new people. So I do a lot of that, and I like to, you know, help guys if they've used a set of my scales on a knife and it is still available for sale, you know, and they're trying to get that moved. I like to help post about it as well. And that's what gets me. Every post that I got tagged for was, you know, a collaboration post or a customer shout out post or something like that with a knife maker. So I probably could dodge it if I readjusted that business model, but I refuse. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just say that what you're saying totally makes sense because you were docked, right? And then you did that post one morning, be like, hey, let's get me out there. And if you made anything with my materials, like, you know, like tag me and whatever collab. So I go ahead and I was like, oh, sure. I got three knives here, pictures. I'll make a reel. I was green, right? I was doing good for the past 4 months. All good. As soon as I post that reel and I collab with Sharky, not even 2 minutes later, I got flagged.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, if that has, like, that's why I haven't sent you any collabs or anything, Brian, because I don't want you to accept a collab with me and end up getting fucked if that's the case, you know?
I don't care. I'm at the point where I don't even think about it. Like, yeah. We just, collaboration's the only way to move forward, I think. You know, don't worry about that too much. Okay. You can collab.
I didn't want to impose any ban hammers on anyone, you know, like, because
if I get a ban hammer, I'll remove the tag or something, you know, yeah. But at the same time, I've not had that issue. And I don't know if it's because, you know, like we're getting close to 100,000 followers. I don't know how they do this. Like where did they determine? Like, I'm looking at Sharky's Instagram. So if you're not familiar with his Instagram, Flying Shark Knives, it's all one word. He has 18,100 followers on Instagram. And there's certain pieces of content here that are just not flagged, and they have knives in them, which is, it's mind blowing to me how they pick this. Like, how do they choose? But at the same time, I think the takeaway from this has to be keep moving forward. Don't stop doing what you're doing. Let this sort itself out. Just keep moving forward. And
absolutely. I think one of the big takeaways for me, honestly, it's caused me to really double down on my sharing model. And I actually really enjoy that aspect of it. As much as it can get repetitive seeing all the, you know, posts from, because most of the people that I follow and most of my customers are knife makers, right? So I probably see 20 or 30 posts a day of, oh, I got hit with the ban, you know? There's times where I can be like, oh my God, we get it. We've all been hit by it. Like, let's move on. But it is kind of nice because it does remind me, you know, it gives me that little nudge of like, hey, this is a community. Help a brother out.
Yep.
And it's caused me to kind of double down on the, oh, that's right. I should be helping out these other guys by sharing and commenting and that kind of stuff. So I've used it more as opposed to using it as a way to get sultry about this. And I mean, I've seen people fold up their business over it, which is a little mind-boggling to me. It really raises some questions about how dedicated you were in the first place.
100%.
I think it's given me more of a drive to help try to get people's names and work out there and trying to come up with creative ways to share the love because, you know, great. Instagram's not going to inorganically share our content with non-customers, but every single one of our pages has customers on it that are not customers of other people. So the more that we work together and collaborate and share each other's work and that kind of stuff, you're still going to reach non-customers. Like, it's inevitable that if enough of us are sharing each other's work and promoting each other and that kind of stuff, you're going to find people who haven't seen your page before. So we can do that ourselves. Dude, and just ignore whatever the heck Instagram's game is these days.
I've literally got reels that I've posted since I got re-hit that have gained followers. I have reels that were shared by other people that made it to non-followers and I gained followers. So there is a workaround and it is sharing our work around. You know what I'm saying? We got to whore our work out there is what we need to do. And we need help from everybody else so we could still keep on growing. Because like you look at when this first happened last year, right? I did what I'm doing now is I just kept on posting. And then one day, on November 29th, I have this fucking date stuck in my head. 2023, my Instagram reel of me scribing a knife blew up. It just blew up. It hit like almost 4 million. And then everything was like a snowball effect. I more than doubled my following and, you know, just everything, other reels in the millions and everything. And I was like, oh shit, this is going good. So I'm taking the same approach again this time. I'm just going to keep on posting 4 or 5 times a day. I don't even care if you guys are annoyed with it because I'm putting in the work and I'm not folding my business. Like Sharky said, I've seen some guys out there leave the platform right last year. Oh, this is fucking bullshit. You know, and I hadn't seen them around. And all of a sudden this week, I see one of these guys come back around, but he's asking us to help one of his buddy that's in a dire situation.
I think the takeaway from this is something we even touched on in the last after show, which was, and I used some harsh words during that process because there was a bunch of guys saying that they can't do this and that they're backing out and they're complaining, and they're doing it publicly, by the way. So when I slap you like a bitch, just be aware that you're being a bitch. So I'm a very,
you're being a bitch.
Yeah, I'm a discerning slapper, you know. Yeah. And people will say to me like, "Oh, I don't do this," and blah blah blah. Just understand something. Like, if you look at any of the level of success that I've achieved, and you wonder how I did it, just remember consistency isn't like by far number one. Like, I just didn't give up. You know, I just kept going. But also, shameless self promotion is another one. And so if you see me making reels and I'm talking about my 10% off birthday sale and I'm showing my parts and I'm offloading trucks and I'm doing all this stuff, and people go, "I can't believe how many machines or how many forges you sell. Oh my gosh, you're doing so great. How do you do that?" Shameless self-promotion. That's how I do it. That's how I do it. I sell my stuff. And it's the thing is also I bring an enormous amount of value to the community. So at the same time, I'm deploying all of these tactics, and there's months where I don't make any money at all. And I just go, you know what? I'm fucked. I'm going to lose, and I'm going to do everyone. I have to fold. And I'm sitting there and I'm wallowing, by the way, in my own, you know, negativity. And then I have to look at myself in the mirror and punch myself in the face and go, "Stop it. You're being an idiot. You know, you're good. You can do this. You can get up. You brush yourself off and continue," because it's okay to feel those things for a little bit and feel it and then go, "You know what? It's time to just stop all this negativity and move forward." Yeah.
As long as you're going after what you truly want, you're good. You know what I'm saying? But if there's people that are just out there. Yeah. And if there's people that are out there and they're just lost with their heads up their ass, well, they're going to pull shit like that off. They're going to leave. They're going to disappear. They're going to be just out and about and no longer in the scene, right?
That's my argument for the passion portion of whatever work you choose. There's a whole bunch of guys that have decided to be Brian House clones and create their grinder companies and create their, you know, whatever they're doing. They're trying to mimic what I'm up to. And I have told them, not them, but I just say it here, is – if you don't really love it, this work will eat you up. Like, why even bother? Like, just find something you really love to do. Don't do a smash and grab thing. Like, for instance, I'm on Sharky's website, Flying Shark Supplies, all one word, .myshopify.com. Sharky, we got to talk about this. You need a URL. You got to have a website. What's going on here? Anyway, all right, we'll get back to that in a minute. But I'm looking at your website and I'm going, these are photos. I can't believe, by the way, this is your quote unquote side hustle, because this is impressive. You have so many great photos. You even put the little shark teeth around the picture, the handle scales, and you know, you're taking it to the next level. You know, you're really dedicated to your craft, right? I'm looking at your website. It's amazing. And I feel like you're doing the work that you love to do by looking at this, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you don't love it, but you tell me. You love this work. Yes.
Oh, I love it. This is absolutely my passion project. And I think you guys were hitting the nail on the head a few minutes ago with, you know, are you doing this or are you passionate about it? Right. And I think that comes becomes very clear when you start talking to people who are like waffling on this. And one of the things when I first started getting into this industry, and there would be knife makers, and they, oh, I think I might hang it up, man. I used to try to talk people out of it, right? Because I love this industry and I wanted other people to love this industry. And so I would try to talk people out of quitting. And I've realized lately that if I'm having to talk you out of quitting, you probably should quit. Because you cannot be successful in a business if you don't care, if you don't love it, right? And if you love it, then you will naturally find ways to hustle. You were talking about this shameless self-promotion, which is definitely a great aspect of it. But the other side of that that I see from you, I see from guys like Coy, I see from Pickle, right? You're not just doing one thing. Right? You're not shamelessly self-promoting one thing. You're constantly delving deeper or expanding or diversifying or something along those lines. One of the things that kills me is when someone puts up a public rant about, oh, this platform's killing me. I can't get any viewership. This is just a dead avenue. And then you talk to them. You're like, well, have you tried this? No. Have you tried this? Oh, I'm definitely not going to do that. Well, have you tried this? Oh, I'm not willing to do that. Okay, so is the problem that what you're doing is not working, or is the problem that you're not willing to do enough to succeed, right? Like, if you actually care and you actually love this, then you should be chasing all the avenues, right? When I started this industry, I was not a big public speaker and definitely not comfortable being on camera. I hated being on camera. And it's still not my favorite part of this. I know that you probably can't tell that from my videos, but I really don't like videoing myself. It's just not my favorite thing. But it's what has to be done to make it work. And I love this industry and I love the work that I'm doing and I want it to be successful. So I'm going to video myself at every single opportunity because it's what works.
Yep.
So it's not an option for me. Like I can't say, well, I'm just going to be one of those guys that does a video because those accounts don't do well. Right? Nope. They don't succeed in the social media environment that we live in. So I said, well, this is what I need to do. I need to suck it up. And I need to figure out how to be good at this. And I'm still constantly trying to learn new ways to make these videos and new things that I could do to make myself more appealing and my products more appealing on a visual level. Because I know that they're sound structurally, but that's not the same thing as being able to sell them online. So it's a constant endeavor for me. And I think a lot of the people you see folding is just because they're not willing to explore those avenues. And they just say, oh, it didn't work. I'm out. And they're like, you know what? If that's your attitude, you're right. You probably should be done because this is not an industry for I tried one thing and it worked. This is a constantly evolving world. So you've got to be willing to try all the things.
100% agree. And you... The other part of this is that I don't think people are hungry enough. You know, that's the other issue is that, and some people take offense to when I say this, but like when you have to make the nut, when you have to do it, it feels different, right? Than when you've got a backup or something, you know? And so there's some guys who, this is a side hustle and it's not really that important to them. And you can kind of tell. And then there's some guys that are somewhere in the middle that are like, yeah, I got to make this money because I need to do it to, you know, pay the rent or whatever, but I still have a full-time job and I still do all this stuff. And then there's guys that just don't have any other income at all. They have to do this. They have no choice. They have to make it work. And even some of those guys, you know, flounder a little bit because they're not really fully invested. So they're just having a hard time kind of figuring it all out and sorting it out. And I'll tell you, man, I've been poor and I don't like it. It's really hard to be poor. There's a saying out there, it's expensive to be poor. And so when I learned, okay, I need to do X, Y, Z and try to, I've always had two jobs. I mean, it's just my life has been always two jobs. Only until probably about 3 years ago, I stopped working at night. Like about 3 years ago, I realized like, okay, I'm more effective during the day if I can rest at night. You know, so I come home 6-7 o'clock and I don't work. I'm trying not to work at night, even though as much as I love to do it, I need to not do it. But there's guys out there that have no choice. They're working all day, you know, and then they come home and their side hustle is this and they have to do it. And they're the hungry ones. You know what? This industry will sort you out real quick. You know, you get sorted out. I find the passion portion of this to be the only driving force that when times are low and you're not making any money and your bank account is at zero, it's not, you don't walk away from the actual business because you love what you do. You don't shift your focus. You go, I'm going to dig even further. I'm going to invest this amount of time and energy and money into this because I love it.
I'd love to give a quick anecdote on this if I can.
Do it.
So, for anyone who's not been tracking on my personal situation, I just moved to Louisiana. I got here about a week ago. And was supposed to be buying a house down here. And literally like 2 days after I got here, found out that it has massive foundation issues and it's not going to be somewhere we can live, which also is where my shop was supposed to be. So until I find a new house, I am shopless, right? I have nowhere permanent to set up my shop, which could absolutely have been a huge issue. However, my wife and I showed up down here with 6 drops worth of scales ready to go that we prefabbed before we left New Mexico. Got them all built up. I've got a bin full of them so I can drop, still have a drop every 2 weeks so I could have a couple months buffer, right? And the amount of work that went into that was brutal, right? Because moving an entire household by itself is a lot of work, right? Not to include the fact that I also had to move my shop and all of my supplies. We also have a pretty large contingent of animals, including an entire flock of chickens. So moving for us is a massive amount of work just by itself.
Real quick, but did you move the chickens? They came with you?
I sure did. All 21.
Fantastic. That in of itself is a podcast. Like, I want to hear all about that story. How do you move a flock of chickens?
I brought 21 chickens in my U-Haul trailer with me.
Oh, my God. 21 chickens. I love it.
But
this is awesome.
I have a day job. My day job pays me relatively well. So I very much, when I found out that I was going to be moving, could have said, all right, Flying Shirt Knives is going to go on a hold. I've got to move. I'll see you guys in a few months. And just taking care of the move. But again, coming back to the passion, right? Like, this company for me is a huge deal for a lot of reasons, and I could get into my motivation for this all day and why I think it's such an important example to be setting for my kids and things like that. But it's a big deal for me. And letting it sit dormant for several months, number one, is a bad business decision. And number two, is just something that mentally, like, I was not on board with, right? I'm not going to let this thing I'm so passionate about just sit there and collect dust for several months. So while we were going through all that work of having to move, we doubled down on our work efforts, which is already a pretty decent amount of work to be doing outside of a day job on nights and weekends. And we doubled down on it to build up a supply of products while still providing my regular customers with regular supplies on a normal timeline and to set aside some products to bring with us. And that's where that passion comes in of, like, absolutely could have just sat back in the passenger seat and been like, all right, got to focus on the move. We'll see Flying Shark Knives in 6 months. But when you start separating the people who care from the people who are just kind of there, like, that's the kind of decision-making of, nah, man, I'm not going to let this company take a back seat. Like, I love this. I love this business. I love this industry.
That's it.
I'm going to put in the extra work now to give me that buffer. And now I'm here and I'm in a rather unfortunate situation where I, you know, don't have a shop. And although I'm already working on some avenues to deal with that also, but I've got a buffer now because I put that work in ahead of time. And I've got digital content that I can put out because I took 9,000 photos and videos before I left. And so I can still be putting out my content. I can still be plugging my products. I've got avenues to still get new, fresh products on the website because I put in the passion and the time. And if you want to be successful, that's the mindset you have to have going into these businesses.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Are you near Fort Polk? Where are you at?
I think Fort Polk's a couple hours north of me. I'm right okay. down in the southwest corner of the state, Lake Charles. Gotcha.
Okay, all right. I was going to say I would connect you with Mike LaValle. He's in Fort Polk, and he's a knife maker. If you were close to him, you guys could connect maybe, but be a good resource. But I think you're a little too far away. But Mike's a good friend of mine, and he's also a lifer, active Army, and so he's got an awesome shop. Right there at Fort Polk, and he makes.
I think
knives
Mike's
there.
Working on retiring, isn't he?
He's got another couple years, I think. But he's going to retire in
Montana.
Everything
ready ahead of time, like his shop and everything. And
I periodically get like walkthroughs of his new shop videos. Yeah. He just sends me, and if you're not familiar with Mike LaValle, check his work out. It's unbelievable stuff. He's another active military guy who decided he wanted to. Be in for life, get his military pension and break free in his 40s and then, make knives for the rest of his life. I mean, that's what he loves to do. And his work is just prolific.
Kills it too.
And he kills it. He crushes it.
He
sells
like
out 30, every drop.
40, 30, 40 knives a drop, and he sells out every time.
Every time.
They're all unique pieces. There's not one the same piece,
Yep.
Segmented scales and all this, everything. And it's great. He's doing great. And that's a good example of putting in the work. He's one of those guys.
Like another guy.
Back down. Yeah.
The definition of work for it. Sharky, thank you for coming on our show today. And usually at the 1 hour mark or thereabout, we switch over. We do another 30 minutes in an after show. So you're welcome to join us for that. If you've been listening to the Work For It podcast, we would appreciate it if you would become a patron. You can go to patreon.com/workforit and join hundreds of your contemporaries who keep this show commercial free. And that is $10.80 a year, less than a dollar a month. You can become a patron and support Work For It. If you got any value out of today's show and you liked what you saw or heard on this show, make sure you go check out Flying Shark Knives on Instagram. And there's more to learn about Kyle and his journey with this. You're a super interesting guest. Thank you for coming on, and we appreciate you. So we're going to I got to read the patron question.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have a question
before we go? And so if you're a patron, you get a chance to like message us a question, and then we answer it in the after show. And usually it's pretty good. We have good questions here. All right, here we go. Eduardo Sol. Ooh. We all know Ed, and he's a fantastic maker and business person. Ed asks us, what are the biggest challenges you have faced when you started your business, and how did you overcome them? That's a good one, because I think Sharky can actually comment on this too. He has a second question. How do you handle setbacks or failures? And then what lessons would you learn from them, or do you learn from them? So those are two very good questions, Ed, and we'll answer that in the after show.
And they could be answered with one answer to both of them together. So that's some good questions.
It is a good question. It comes down to the core, your core character, I think.
Yes.
And also, by the way, when we talk about core character, and we'll get into this in the after show, and the things that like Sharky's talking about and Pickle and I are talking about, is I think the one of the biggest questions is, are you born with that core character trait? And I'd like to comment on that and talk about my journey of becoming a decent human being. So, all right. Anyway, let's move on to the after show, shall we?
Shall we?
Oh, wait. I got to do a dad joke real quick.
Oh, yeah.
How does Darth Vader like his toast?
A little bit on the dark side.
On the dark side, baby. That's it. Let's go. After show. Let's go. Brian, we hope you're feeling better, buddy. We'll see you in the next episode. Thanks so much.